this sort of historic situation that's happening in our area. There's been a lot of concern, there's been a lot of discussion about what it might mean to have the Oakland Police Department placed into some kind of receivership. Everybody tells us it's this historic event, that it, and yet very few of it's unprecedented. And so for us as a community to try to figure out what our relationship to that effort is pretty important. So what we thought would be best tonight, especially, we want to be aware of Mr. Channon's time. We got to try to get him out of here by 8 o'clock. He's got some other stuff happening in this very busy time. But what we were hoping to accomplish is to tie together some of the work that has happened beforehand. There's really interesting things happening in the police accountability movement. That on the one hand, there's the horrors of Alan Bluford's murder and the indignity of Officer Masso being allowed to walk scot-free and not even to be investigated thoroughly. Officer Masso being his murderer. There's all these heinous crimes happening, but there's also movements to wean us away from the OPD, and there's interesting conversations happening about what if we didn't have police? Do we have to resign ourselves to this sort of treatment and living this way? And how would we change that? And so there's some great work, and I'm going to invite Sanyaka from the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement to talk about some of the work that happened here about 2 weeks ago. There was a day-long forum. There were some incredible conversations and possibly some new directions that we as communities could think about as we try to deal with the scourge of police brutality. Concurrently, there are efforts by Jim Channon and John Burris to take action. And I just want to, from the bottom of my heart, Mr. James Channon, I want to say how grateful I am for the work that you have done in this case over the last 10 years, how diligent you've been and how faithful you've been to the movement. And I really appreciate your work. Let's give it up. I have known Jim for over 20 years, and he's always been there for Cop Watch. He's always been there for the movement, and so I just want to give him love and respect as he goes through this process. Anyway, so the way we're going to do the night is we're going to hear from Sanyaka, then Jim is going to be up here, and he's going to make a presentation. You'll have the opportunity to ask clarifying questions. After Jim goes, we will have the opportunity to break down into small groups and try to get other questions answered or raise other good questions and see how we can, as a community, best respond to the proposal for a federal receivership of the Oakland Police Department. So please join me in welcoming another incredible activist and a pillar and a light. Please welcome Sanyaka from the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement.
All right. So a couple weeks ago, over here, as Andrea said, Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, the People's Tribunal, and others organized a forum on community self-defense and self-respect. It was coming off of a report that the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement came out with that showed that every 36 hours, a black person is being killed by the police, a security guard, or a vigilante in the United States. All right, something that shows more than just racism, but something that shows a practice of genocide in the United States. And out of that, we are demanding a national plan of action for racial justice. That one is something that should be built up by grassroots forces and will require a lot of community engagement and building in the neighborhoods in a way that hasn't been done in some time. Part of the work that we're calling for is the creation of different self-defense networks. There were some work groups that came out of the meeting, a Black self-defense network, a general people's self-defense network that would hold the self-defense of, you know, Latinos, queer folks, South Asians, Muslims. There was an idea for a referendum on community control over the OPD that came out of this, and then continued work on building a tribunal that would be able to collect the testimony and provide some of the documentation around police abuses and other human rights abuses in the United States for use in international forums like the United Nations and the Inter-American Courts. Right? That said, the work groups have been meeting, and there's a lot still necessary. The major piece, though, is that it is going to require that folks to actually go out in the neighborhood, do the old-fashioned door knocking, and build the relationships. A lot of it's really about those relationships. That's the core of it. That's the core of it, and that's what we really do need. Looking at the work that Comrade Channon is working on, I think it's good, and I think that there's, in any struggle, there's going to be multiple fields, right? And I think I applaud the brother for working on this. I haven't read the thing, so I'm ignorant on the specifics of it, but a question that I have, does it open up an opportunity to get, you know, an opportunity for the feds to test their accountability processes? Is there a way for us to get documentation on things that we haven't been able to receive before, right? Can we get some unredacted copies of the police report that came out around Alan Bluford? Can we get that out of something like this, right? If that's the case, I think that's going to be a key tool. The federalization process isn't something that, I mean, I'm ignorant of it. I'm here learning about this stuff just like y'all are, right? But if that's the case, it would be a way for some organizing to be done to make some use of that, of the things that would open up, right? Because, you know, the Alan Bluford organizing is still happening. Just because they shut the case down doesn't mean that the case is shut down in the street, right? And with that added information, it can, you know, folks can make a use of it. It can be a weapon and a tool, right, to secure some justice for this brother and for everybody else, right? And it would be a tool to be able to, you know, be able to take the actual report out to the community, let people see this stuff, you know, use it as a tool to talk with your neighbors and stuff about, right? So I think that's the sort of thing that can be potentially opened up, but I'm here to hear from Brother Channon about that too, so I don't know. I'll leave it there. I'm going to be here throughout the evening, and if folks have questions about what went down at the self-defense forum, please come and see me. I want to cut this short to respect the brother's time so we can hear and learn what he has to say. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. All right, let's go ahead and, again, Jim Channon, come on up and let's make it happen.
First of all, I'm going to put this down, and if any of you see me leave the podium without it, you would let me know. I'd be most appreciative. When I was talking to Andrea last night about my coming here, I realized that...
Hang on one second.
Louder.
We need you right in there.
Okay.
Hang on. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you need to be right there.
All right, how's that? Is that better? Better? Okay. When I was talking to Andrea last night, I realized that it's almost exactly 40 years ago today that I became active in an organized way in police reform efforts. I'd been in demonstrations and protests before that time, but in about October of 1972, I went to a meeting called by a group of people in Berkeley. I've lived in Oakland for 32 years, but at that time I did live in Berkeley. And that meeting was called because the people there at that time felt that something needed to be done. There needed to be a unified statement and a unified plan of action about what we were going to do about the problem of police violence in Berkeley. The Black Panther Party had put an initiative called Community Control Police on the ballot. It had failed. The African American community was one of the largest groups that voted against it because it divided the city up in three police departments, and they felt they would not be able to go outside of their own community if that happened. So there was a recognition that we had not reached them. There's a recognition, though, that we had to do something. And it was a coalition of people from the Black Panther Party all the way over to various groups and even the McGovern Democrats and just people who wanted to be active and get something done like myself. And we talked a long time about what we could do that would be a principled statement, and yet at the same time be able to reach out to the community in Berkeley and actually get something done. And we came up with the Police Review Commission. We came up with forcing Berkeley police to live in Berkeley. We came up with regulating their weapons. And we came up with forcing them to disclose their agreements with other law enforcement agencies. Two of those four initiatives did pass, the Police Review Board and the Mutual Aid PAC. And I could talk about that a long time, but that's not why I'm mentioning all this. I'm mentioning this because of the importance of unity, that when we all acted together, we were able to do something that none of us really could do separately. We were able to print flyers. We were able to run a campaign. We were able to reach out to the community. We were able to go door to door. We were able to win over a lot of opposition from the police union and others. And another reason I'm telling you this is that no matter what we do, John and I on the receiver hearing, we have been consistent from the very beginning that what we're doing is not a substitute for community organizing or political action. Never would I ever say that. I don't believe it. I don't want you to believe it. This is just one small area of what we all need to accomplish. And it's an important area, at least in our opinion, but it's no substitute for community action and for principled unity around doing something about the Oakland Police Department. I've come to the unfortunate conclusion after many years of being a lawyer, living in Oakland, and seeing the police in various arenas. I used to believe that police, there's something about being a police officer that gives the amount of discretion, and a number of police, a small number, but a number, will abuse that discretion. They have awesome power, the power of life and death, which even the head of our corporations don't have, at least directly, to shoot somebody. And I used to believe that a certain number of people will abuse that power. It was my job as a civil rights organizer, as a civil rights lawyer, as the organizing that I did to keep that in check, and that that's what was happening in Oakland. It was no different from any other police department. There was a need to keep them under control, but they, at the end of the day, they were the same as any other police department across the United States. I no longer believe that. I believe that the Oakland Police Department is in serious trouble, that they have unique, almost unique, bad qualities, lack of leadership, lack of accountability that doesn't exist anywhere, practically anywhere in the United States. That we have here a big problem, a problem that's different from, let's say, Detroit, which I'll talk about in a minute, where I was in April, or even Los Angeles, which has done some improvement from their consent decree. That they have proven themselves to be a special case needing serious work by all of us, including the federal courts. When I started with the Ryder's case, we believed that we could work with them to get some sort of meaningful reform, and I donated over 1,000 hours of my time uncompensated working with them to try and make this happen. I have to say that that's been generally a failure. And that saddens me as a resident of Oakland and as a person who would like to feel that they've been a success. But I don't feel that way. We were able to get compensation for the 126 people, all of whom were African American with one exception. We were able to get them compensation. I consider that to be a success. But then we were able, we set up the negotiated settlement agreement, which was supposed to bring reforms into the police department. And we hired an independent monitoring team to make sure those reforms were implemented. And it just hasn't worked. What's happened in the 10 years that we've been involved is that there have been a series of incidents in Oakland that are almost unique. And are different from other places. For example, the response to the anti-Iraq war movement at the Port of Oakland in 2003, an incident the New York Times called the most violent response by any police department in the United States against an anti-war demonstration. Or the Smith class action case, which John and I did in 2005, where one officer for years was able to stop immigrant Asian women, 100 of them, over years, and take sexual advantage of them with no accountability and no supervision, complaints to internal affairs that went ignored. And that's the difference between Oakland and other law enforcement agencies, or many of them, not all, which is that eventually people get caught at fairly early in the game. But in Oakland, it went on and on and on. Dozens of citizens, women, being taken advantage of who just came to this country. Or the search warrant case, another case which occurred during the pendency of the negotiated settlement agreement, where the Oakland Police Department itself concluded that 2 out of 3 of every confidential informant warrant that they did was based on false or perjured testimony. And as a result, we represented another 100 people, 99 of whom were not Caucasian. And they had their we had one man who was 73 years old who lived in East Oakland. He had been an employee of Kellogg's his whole life. No record. A police officer saw drug activity in his backyard, which I'm sure he was unwelcome by him and his family, who were hardworking people. And instead of getting them, they said that his house was the center for drug activity, which was a flat-out lie. So they came into his house and they took him away. He had high blood pressure. They took him to Santa Rita. And Santa Rita rejected him because he was a health risk. Then they drove him to North County to try and get him in there, and they rejected him. And then they left him in the street by Highland Hospital. And he was one of 100 people. And that's the point. These things can happen in isolated incidents. But when you have 100 people with 2 out of 3 warrants defective because they're based on false or perjurious testimony, that indicates a systemic problem within the Oakland Police Department or Occupy Oakland. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. The strip search case, which was just decided, where dozens of African American men had their pants pulled down right in public in this city in one of the most humiliating methods of law enforcement that anyone can possibly think of. And this judge who heard that awarded punitive damages against a police officer, and the city council voted to pay for that, just like they voted to pay for the lieutenant who framed Judy Barry. They voted to pay her punitive damages. And again, not just one person or a single person, but dozens of people have their pants pulled down with no accountability at all. I could go through all the wrongful deaths that I've been involved in and that I haven't been involved in. Cases which we've been successful in getting compensation and cases that we have not. But all those people have one thing in common. They're dead. And the compensation is meaningless for them. And it's next to meaningless for their families. What we need to do is make sure those people don't die in the first place. Because what we can do as lawyers is so pathetically minimal. We have to stop it from happening in the first place. So after this went on for years and years, we had a 5-year period of the negotiated settlement agreement. We got some reforms done. It was going to be extended one time to 7 years, and it was. At the end of 7 years, the police department was not in compliance, and we went to the judge and we got it continued to 9 years. And after 9 years, the same thing, and we got it continued for 11 years. And now we're in the January will be the end of the 10th year. The monitor team that was first appointed was half police officers and half Justice Department lawyers. And they were chosen by the Oakland Police Department, and we went along with it. And they found this department in chronic noncompliance, and pointed out the strip search problem in one of their reports years before the lawsuit was filed. And if the Oakland police had listened to them then, they would not have been sued, and the people would not have had been humiliated the way they were. That monitor team left. They walked out in the middle of the worst recession that this country's seen since the Great Depression. They were paid $700,000 a year, and they walked out because they felt they could not do any more. And that made me, who was getting $10,000 a year, feel like, what am I doing? You know, well, what's going on here? So then we tried to interview another monitor team, and this one was all police, every single one. Was an ex-police officer, high-ranking, the chief of Rochester, a Miami police officer, a guy who was a Republican and chief of police of a small town in New Hampshire. This is the current monitor team. And this is the team that's found them in chronic noncompliance again. 300 years of law enforcement experience these people have, and they've had the exact same response as the first monitor team, and as all of you. So that made me start thinking there's something going on here that's different from other cities that makes it bad. But we had how could this be? We had a liberal Democratic mayor. We had a progressive city council. Well, I'll tell you that city council has never, ever in all the years asked John and I to go there and to tell them what is wrong or why we're doing what we're doing or had any investigation whatsoever or any accountability of the police at any time. Not a single council member has reached out to me for the first 11 years of NSA, first 10 years of NSA. Recently, it started to happen a little bit. Mayor Dellums never met with us or the monitor, not a single time. Never, never came to a meeting the entire time that he was mayor. And that's because they're afraid. They're afraid of crime. They're afraid of being badmouthed. They're afraid of the union. They're afraid, period. It's just not politically acceptable to help poor people who may not vote because they have felonies or because they're just working so hard they can't get it together. So those people are forgotten by our elected leaders. And it really makes no difference what their liberal conservative bent is. It's the exact same response. In fact, it's worse here than elsewhere in my experience. So it came to 2011, and then Occupy Oakland happened. And Occupy Oakland proved to me that this process is broken and a failure, because the response was exactly, this characterized exactly the same way as the response to the port by the media. The worst response by any law enforcement agency on the CNN, on Jon Stewart, every single place across the country, they were characterized as the worst. And they were the worst. So they hired Tom Frazier, another in a series of endless consultants the city has paid for, to tell them they're doing a good job. Tom Frazier looked like it was going to go okay. He was chief of police of Baltimore. He was a San Jose police officer for over 20 years. And what did he conclude? That the Oakland Police Department is not a learning organization. That they have systemic failures that are historically and legacy of systemic failure. That their leadership is lacking. That their own police officers said that their investigatory tools are a failure. Do you see Tom Frazier here today? No, because he didn't give the city elected people what they were looking for, and he is gone. And now we have law firms. People say, well, a receiver, that's going to be really expensive. Well, right now they're spending $800,000 hiring a law firm bonanza for to investigate the Occupy cases. And there will be no sustainability when those people leave, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute, because when they leave, their knowledge goes with them, and it's back to the same old at Internal Affairs at OPD. So I concluded that after Occupy that something was wrong. And then I went to Detroit. I was invited by the Monitor team to go to Detroit. And Detroit proved to me beyond any doubt that there was a real problem here. I went to Detroit. Detroit has a higher crime rate than Oakland. Detroit has lost half of its population since 1967. Detroit has lost a quarter of its population since 2000. Detroit is on the verge of bankruptcy. Detroit has a huge crime problem. Detroit has the same monitoring team that Oakland has. They have 190, something like that, different tasks, where Oakland has 23. Unlike Oakland, Detroit has to comply each time with every single task. They don't get to, when they comply, like in Oakland, we let them, when they comply with the task, it's dropped from the list. In Detroit, it's all over again, every quarter, 190. Detroit's gone from 29% compliance to 85% compliance. In the same time, Oakland has made virtually no progress whatsoever. Nothing. When I went to Detroit, I saw the police officers there welcoming the monitoring team. They were happy to see them. And we're not, I'm not a Pollyanna. I understand that Detroit Police Department has problems. But guess how many people were shot and killed in Detroit last year? One. Do you know what that person did? He came into the police department. He shot two cops. He had a gun. It's on YouTube. You can see it. Okay, that's the one person who was killed in Detroit last year, with a population double of Oakland. You have a likelihood of approximately 20 times greater of having a firearm drawn on you in Oakland than in Detroit. In Detroit, complaints are down. I could go on and on about the collaborative approach there, about the command accountability meetings they have there, where people like you can come and they go precinct by precinct. What have you done about crime? How many complaints do you have? What are you doing about civil rights violations? The whole command staff sits up there and grills these people, and they better come through. Have you ever seen that in Oakland? I sure haven't. And we never will unless we demand it and make it happen. Well, I got on the plane in April, and I realized that we had to change the paradigm, that John and I were actually enabling this kind of bad behavior by pretending that we were accomplishing something. And so we filed the receiver motion, because we do not want to meet with these people anymore and beg them to do the right thing. We don't want to read any more monitor reports anymore that basically says how bad they are, and then they get up there, and it's year after year. I've seen this. We promise, Judge, within 3 months we'll be in compliance. Deborah Edgerly, the 6-month plan, the 3-month plan, the 1-year plan, the PowerPoint presentations, and it's all baloney. It's all, none of it has ever happened. Endless promises unkept by the OPD in court in front of Judge Henderson. Promises that if you or I made, oh Judge, we'll pay our fine in 6 months. If you came back and didn't pay your fine, what would happen? Well, what happens with the OPD is they make the same promise again and again and again. And it's just, I'm promised out. I'm promised out because we can't wait for another Occupy Oakland. We can't wait for someone else to be shot with no accountability. We can't wait for another class action where people have their pants pulled down and are humiliated because they're African American. We cannot wait any longer to not try every last thing, including the drastic remedy of receivership. Now, what is a receivership? A receivership's different because right now what we have is the monitor says how bad they are, and then they say they won't do it again, and then the judge gives a speech. And then I give a speech. I've given all these speeches. I've quoted from Winston Churchill. I quoted from Martin Luther King. I quoted from Malcolm X. And I'm tired of quoting and going through this ridiculous ceremony that means nothing. So this time, if they don't do it, they will be forced to do it. They will be forced to comply with the NSA. Now, it has been tried before with some mixed success with the prison health system that we have in California. Another sorry, horrible horror show, and I used to do prison litigation. I've been to most of the level 4 facilities in California, including the medical facility in Vacaville. And it really, I can't even think about describing it now because just Oakland's enough for me right now. But in any event, they have pointed a receiver there. And there has been a decline in prisoner deaths, and there has been some improvement in the health facility there. And they've been ordered to do things, and if they don't do it, they hire people, they make things happen, they fire people, and that's what happens there. That is a more broad-based receivership than I think will happen in Oakland if our motion is granted. Because that's a system where the services are not given at all, as opposed to the services are given badly, which is the case in Oakland. So what we're going to look at in the receiver, if we get the judge has to rule on it, maybe I should go through that. We filed our motion in October. The city's going to file its counter motion in November. And then there'll be a hearing on December 13th of this year. At least that's what's happening right now. That hearing is open to the public, and you will come if you want. I wish you would. There may be some parts that are so-called confidential. I don't really know that. And then the judge will make a ruling shortly after that if the case doesn't settle before, which doesn't look too good right now. The receiver will have the power only to do the tasks that are in the NSA. So, for example, crowd control is not a task in the NSA. So the receiver will not have the power to do anything about crowd control. I'll tell you some of the things that are really big in the NSA that they have not complied with, which the receiver will hopefully be able to do something about. The first one is stop data and racial profiling, which they have not complied with chronically for 9 years. They haven't filled out the forms, and one day we came and they passed out these conclusions they made, which are in our brief, which is, so I was asked to say, well, where can you find a brief, the brief? And I Googled OPD receiver motion, and I found stopopd.wordpress.com. And there was our motion. I saw it today. So I don't know who stopopd.wordpress.com. Is that anyone here? No? Okay, well, anyway, it was there today. The whole motion, you can read it. So the receiver, if appointed, will have the power. Oh, I was telling you about the documents they passed out. So they pass out these documents, which gave some of their preliminary conclusions about how people are stopped in Oakland. And guess what? If you're white and you're stopped, the chances are you've actually done something. But if you're not white and you're stopped, the chances are much lower that you've actually done something. And that is unacceptable completely. As is the drawing of the firearm, which the receiver will also have some power to deal with. And we're trying to deal with that even now, because those figures show, one study showed that when the Oakland police could not justify the drawing of a firearm, 91% of the people were African American and 9% were Hispanic. Another time it was another quarter it was 82% African American and 18% Hispanic. I believe in the most recent report we will see the first white person who had a gun drawn on them that without justification after almost a year, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people of color having firearms drawn on them. We're thinking that something can be done on that and that they can be ordered to comply with that, and there'll be consequences if they don't. We're going to be looking, as opposed to the way Internal Affairs does it. Internal Affairs, always when they have a big investigation like in the Ryder's case or in the search warrants case, yes, they disciplined a few officers, and guess what? None of them were above the rank of officer except one sergeant in the Ryder's case. We're going to be trying to change that, and I want to talk about that in particular. In the warrants case, as I said before, 2 out of 3 warrants were defective based on false or perjurious testimony. But the people disciplined were all the police officers. But what about the deputy chief who was in charge of training people to write warrants? Or what about the chief of police who is responsible for disciplining people? Or who reviews these warrants before they get sent to the judge? Is it a 21-year-old police officer? What about these people getting $250,000 a year who have all this expertise. Never has they, have they even brought, been brought up on charges. Well, the way we would like to see it work if a receiver is appointed is that the receiver will have the power to hire and fire the chief of police. And they'll have the power to demote the deputy chiefs. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at an end to a few people at the bottom who may have done something true, but that's not going to change these mass travesties that seem unique to Oakland. That's not going to change them. So we're looking at a system where the highest people are held accountable as they should be. So, I don't know how long I've talked for, but I'm sort of feeling that's it. But let me see. Yes, span of control is another thing. And we're looking at having the same sergeant supervise the same officer instead of officers wandering through the department with rotating supervision. That's very important because some of these people, they don't even know what they're doing, and that's been a big thing, and it hasn't been in compliance. A couple of things I want to say about so-called federalization or a federal takeover. I don't know where that came from, but that's not our intent. Let's say we had a federal takeover and the feds came in and ran the whole police department for a year or two. And then let's say that they even did a great job, that none of you had a single complaint about their performance. And then they left. What would change? Nothing. Nothing would change because they would be gone, just like the law firms with the $800,000 doing the Occupy Oakland investigation. The point of a receiver will not be to run the police department until we get tired and leave. The point of the receiver will be to make a sustainable change in the Oakland Police Department so the Oakland Police Department has some capacity to run itself. Because if we don't do that, we're going to fail. Even if we succeed in the short term, we're looking at the long term. Now, I want to sort of close where I began, which is to say that none of this is going to mean anything without community support. There have been movements, and I participated in them for many years in Oakland, but we haven't succeeded. We're sort of all doing our own thing, and some of us are doing really good things, but I think it's fair to say that we have a real big mess here. There's no way that we're going to change this mess without a movement to support meaningful change in the Oakland Police Department. There's no way that we're going to fix this. So, as a newscaster said when in the 60s when I used to listen to alternative news, if you don't like the news today, go out and make some of your own. Thank you.
Can you stick around? It's 8 o'clock, but it's still questions.
Yes.
So, go ahead with your questions.
Questions. Yes.
Do you want to hold
it for me? I'd
So, Jim, I think that was a good report, and I'm pleased that you sort of clarified the issues regarding the extent of federal involvement. I think some people have the idea that the FBI, the ATF, and the DEA would come in and start policing Oakland. But do you think there's a good chance that the judge will either himself or give the monitor the authority to hire the new chief? Because in my opinion, that's where it starts.
Well, I agree with you, and that's where our current non-negotiable demand, that they have that power. So I agree. Without that power, I don't think it's going to work at all. Yes? I'm sorry?
Several chiefs have been fired in Oakland and replaced.
Yes.
The
I agree with you, but I'm hoping that the chief that is chosen, if it comes to that, will be someone who will have some sort of meaningful legacy. I mean, one of the things, I was involved with the Richmond police. I don't know how many of you remember the Cowboys in the late 70s and early 80s. And it was just as bad as Oakland. And in fact, Richmond is an interesting case because I went from a point where we were getting, at one time, I think we had 70 cases in Richmond, including 6 or 7 wrongful deaths. It was very similar to Oakland now. And they had a series of lackluster and even bad chiefs. But finally, they got this chief named Lansdowne who went on to San Jose. And I actually met with him, and he said to me, he said, "I'm going to clean this place up," he says. So I went, yeah. I've heard this before, but you know, you don't hear things in Richmond now like you do in Oakland. And it's not heaven on earth, and we all know that. But there are a lot of people alive in Richmond now who wouldn't be there if they didn't have some effort to reform and if he hadn't done some of the things he did. So I think it's possible, but I don't think it's a formula for success that's bound to succeed. I think it's a possibility. All of these things are possibilities only. Yes?
Yeah, I can go ahead and take particular names.
Okay, yeah, you can do it. Yeah,
yeah. Why don't you go ahead? 1, 2, 3, 4.
One of the things that the progressive politicians have warned the community about is that the senior means that Oakland's entire budget will be stripped apart. The receiver will have power to order the department to double its size. To me, seems crazy because the NSA isn't about the crime rate, isn't about the staffing level. It's about how the police we have do their jobs. What's your perspective on the budgetary impact of the
city? I'm really glad. That's one of the things in my notes I forgot to say. One of the really most staggering figures, which KTVU, the Fox affiliate, did a story on this actually. And they did the amount of judgments in Oakland compared to San Jose and San Francisco. And the numbers are $57 million in Oakland since the NSA, $26 million in San Jose, in San Francisco, and $8 million in San Jose. So we have 2 million people with $34 million and 400,000 people with $57 million. So then they say, well, it's going to be so expensive to have a receiver. Well, how many rec centers could be built with $57 million? How many scholarships, how many libraries, how many improvements to Lake Merritt? So I believe that, and I hope, that while the receiver will be expensive, that the net, that there will be actually a net savings if we can get these travesties down and these mass tort cases to be eliminated. I think the argument is completely facetious because the same city council members who talk about receivers now and how much they're cost have sat by and paid all of these judgments and all of these verdicts for all of these years and never said anything about what caused them or why they shouldn't happen. So that's my answer.
1, 2,
so you talked about there was a 5-year and then there was a 9-year extension, 11-year extension, that sort of thing. Do you think Henderson, Judge Henderson, is going to, in other words, stand up to this process and actually do what you'd like him to do? Or is it just going to be kind of...
Well, I don't want to say what I think Judge Henderson is going to do because that's bad for my legal career and probably bad for the case. I will say this. He was a U.S. attorney in the South. He gave Martin Luther King a ride and was fired. It's well known. He ordered the receiver in the Prison Health Service case, and he's done a lot of good work around prison. So we're just going to have to see what happens, but I'm not making predictions. Obviously, I think you know what I think he should do. I've put it in black and white. Yes?
Yeah, so I was I'm getting back to the question I asked on the podium. Is there a way, any way in this motion to get the documents opened up? Like, if we could get some of this stuff around the blueprint stuff opened up, that would be cool. And then another question is, what ways do you see this kind of opening up some room for other organizing? Like, how would you see, like, a community organizing kind of linkage with this process?
Okay. Well, as far, one of the things that's true, you know, people think we live in a very liberal state because we're going to vote for President Obama or whatever. But in fact, there are things about California that are really the worst in the country. For example, shot more people in prison in the 90s than in all the states combined at one point. And one of the things that they do in California that, like, my mother lives in Florida, she's in her 90s. So when they have hearings, disciplinary hearings, they're on TV, okay, in Florida. Okay, they're on TV. Okay, and that's in the South, you know, they don't have strong police unions. So, you know, you get disciplined, that's, you're on the newspaper. You know, there's this magazine I used to get called Police Discipline Monthly, where they're it all. it's all there. So the law in California is that Chief Jordan could release the Bluford case. And the only reason he released the redacted version is at all, even what he did, is because of people like you demanding that he do it. You forced him to do that. Okay, he did not he's not released most of the death cases. So that's a case where a community outrage can pour. There's nothing to stop them from releasing these documents, nothing. The decision to release confidential material is largely in the hands of the chief of police and the mayor. They get to decide. There's no law that says they can't. So that's something you can do, and I can't, frankly. I mean, I get to see all this stuff, and I'd be arrested if I let it out. But we try and make as much thing as public as possible. But I think community outrage really is the way to go. As far as what you can do, I think it would be good to speak out and support. But I think there's more of a need for some sort of response to our elected officials. Why we don't have elected officials who really speak for us on police issues, and why that is, and what we can do to force these people and create a movement. If not get rid of them, then create a strong kind of police commission or something like that. But it's not my place to say these things. I think it's your place to say these things.
I'm curious whether with the recent history of Deanna Santana basically protecting the police and she, you know, actively trying to block the publication of the study that was done, and I actually was present when she told the League of Women Voters that in response to my question that the monitor or the, you know, her phrase group was saying that Howard Jordan's really the guy for the job, when in fact in the report they didn't say that really. The fact that she's misrepresenting the truth constantly at the salary of $260,000 or something, is she culpable legally? Because we know she's culpable. We know she's hiding murderers in the department. But is there anything we can do to include getting her out of there and getting, you know, like, I know politicians are elected, but she's not elected.
She's at the pleasure of the mayor.
But if she's violated her contract, because they don't want to get rid of her.
She's at the pleasure of the mayor, and the mayor can do whatever she wants. So you should tell her to do what you want if that's how you feel. And I mean, you know, that there's, I mean, if, you know, you can't, it's very difficult to sue politicians for lying, as you probably can guess. Yes? Could you speak up, sir?
Yeah, sure. Do you have an opinion? You talked about how the elected officials are scared of the police and how strong the police union is here as compared to the South and Detroit and so on. Do you know what their favorite tactics are, the police unions, for intimidating elected officials?
Well, I got to say this about the police union. They're representing their people, and they do a real good job of representing their officers. And my wish is not that we need to attack the union, but that our elected officials do as good a job of representing us as they do of representing their police officers. If that would, you know, that these officers are like anyone else. If they get in trouble, they have a right to be defended. But the city, we have a right to be represented. And that's the big issue, in my view, is that we're not being represented. And if the politicians stand up for what's right, if we stand up for what's right, that's the key to dealing with the union. Not saying, well, you know, officers shouldn't have rights that we want for ourselves, but saying we have rights that we're not getting. And one of them is to have elected officials who will stand up to the union when they're wrong. Yes, I'm sorry. Ma'am? Did you?
Yes. Did you get?
I said, yes.
So we're going to number five. Before we do that, I just want to offer the opportunity. Here's a, if you want follow-up announcements, or if you want to be informed about court dates or things that are coming on the website today. So I'm going to pass this around. Silent excuse.
I got three more minutes, so. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I've got three things you can address in whatever you want. One, the first thing in the budget is that I do know what you said in meetings and has never denied.
I can't hear you.
It costs the city $3.2 million for the continuation of the consent decree that the district court costs. Is that true?
I don't know. Yeah, it's. Yeah, I want to say that. I'll answer that, but I want to say something else about the U.S. attorney here. You know, the U.S. attorney. We have there are U.S. attorneys who actually arrest police officers for violating people's civil rights, and you can read about them online. Our U.S. attorney is more concerned with busting the pot clubs. And that's something you could do. And actually busted one of them the day that that guy was killing people at Oikos University. I think that there has, you know, just like people in the South, of which there are unfortunate analogies for African Americans in East Oakland to the South. I mean, for some of them, not much has changed. I think that we need to demand these prosecutions take place when warranted. And I think, frankly, the current U.S. attorney needs to hear from you about the kind of job she's doing. As far as the contempt of court, no, there has not been a contempt. We brought a motion to hold two officers in contempt who hid their badge and failed to do something about it. And the minute we filed that motion, the Oakland police came in and handed out some real discipline there. We can't run the department by filing motions for every misconduct. So, you know, we would like to see some contempt, but at this point, we want to see the receiver.
My question was somebody really such as the chief.
What?
I'm talking about someone in a position of accountability like the chief of police.
Yes. You have to take that up with Judge. I can't hold someone in contempt.
No, no, I'm asking, in your opinion, has it been a political decision, or has it?
I don't want to comment on the judges not doing contempt. I just can't do that right now. Yes.
I was just wondering your thoughts on the California. You were speaking about other states, the California Police Bill of Rights, how that plays out in Oakland. If you think there's any hope for. Chipping away at that?
Well, I think that that again, let me. You know, people say, well, they have really good lawyers, and they use the Police Officers Bill of Rights, and all these officers walk from cases that they should be fired from, and that's true. Okay, but the reason it's true is because in Oakland. The Internal Affairs Bureau is not dedicated to doing the right thing. when they go into these arbitrations where people, you know, job is on the line, and the police officers union is totally prepared. They have expert witnesses, they've done their homework, they're ready. But here, we don't have the commitment in the internal affairs and by the politicians and by the lawyers in the city attorney's office to get the job done. I believe if that commitment took place, that the police officer's Bill of Rights wouldn't be the problem that it is. I think there's no commitment to firing these people. They'll fire somebody, but then they won't do the work. You have, just like what I do. If I had a wrongful death case and I didn't do any work, we would lose for sure. Well, that's what they do. They don't do the work, and they lose for sure.
Can yes. Can I just check in for 1 second? I just want to be respectful of your time.
Yeah. Two more questions.
So I had actually called a number of people out. You're number 6, you're number 7.
All right. Okay.
Great. Okay. And number 8 was you, and number 9.
Okay.
Two parts, I'll be concise, you need to be brief, of course. The Citizens Police Review Board, what are your general thoughts on them now, and how the receivership, will they have been changed? And do you have a copy of the OPD general orders? CPRB general orders.
All right, CPRB, I believe, is weak, and you know, it's that's, I think, some reforms that when I started at the beginning of this talk, I talked about, you know, principled reform and real change. And I don't think the CPRB has been real change. They are weak. For example, if you sue, they don't investigate your complaint. So by definition, the most serious cases are never investigated. And that's not true of internal affairs. I believe there should be a real police commission, and the CPRB is not that entity. I thought their performance in Occupy Oakland was horrible. They just didn't do the job. They're underfunded, and they have no real power. What the general orders, I don't know that. The police department has, actually, there's some amazing stuff on the police department website. And like
they won't.
I don't know then. I know they did a critique of Occupy Oakland that was on there for a long time that was pretty devastating. They have some audits from their OIG, which Detroit has a Civil Rights Integrity Bureau that does a really good job. The OIG in Oakland does a sort of lackluster job. They haven't done an annual report in 2 years, but they do have some interesting audits. They did audit of search warrants. They've done some interesting audits, so you should look there. But I don't understand why they don't release the general
they
orders.
They said they don't even have a full document in digital format, and I can't. It must be hard.
I think that's wrong.
Just so you know.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
If the motion is granted, how will the receiver be appointed?
Oh, thank you.
Will the receiver be accountable?
Okay. So that also is up to Judge Henderson. The way the prison receiver was appointed is my understanding, I've just heard, that the plaintiff's lawyers, which are John and I in this case, would get the right to nominate somebody, and so would the city, and the judge could either pick one of those people, or they could he could appoint his own person. And then, the first receiver was fired by both sides in the prison case, and then the judge appointed somebody with no input from the plaintiff and defendant. So, I mean, I don't know. As far as accountability, if they do a bad job, we're going to try and deal with it. You know, we're going to make our voice heard. Hopefully that won't happen. The first prison receiver, both the prison system and the plaintiff's prison law office thought that that person should go, and they did. So hopefully we'll have some input into their performance. Okay. Thank you very much, all of you.
Thank you.